And this is the SF Signal Podcast, the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal Podcast. If I don't say Hugo Award-winning, John doesn't give me my cookie. My name is Patrick Hester. I am your host. I am a author, a blogger, and a podcast dude, and all-around functional nerd. Tonight, my guest is someone that I met at Capricorn. And if you don't know what Capricorn is, you need to go check it out because it was a lot of fun. And they invited me out there to be a guest of honor. I was walking through the dealer room, and I came across Lauren. And Lauren Jankowski, why don't you tell people who you are and what you do?
Hi, I'm Lauren Jankowski. I'm a feminist fantasy author who specializes in strong, kick-ass women because there are never enough. I'm also the founder of Asexual Artists, a blog dedicated to highlighting the contributions of asexual individuals to the artistic fields. And yeah, just an overall book lover and yeah, kick-ass women lover, basically.
Awesome. And so you threw out a bunch of stuff there. So let's break it down a little bit. Mm-hmm. Number one, you said a feminist fantasy novelist because you like kick-ass women characters.
Yes.
So what exactly does that mean to you?
Basically, a feminist is somebody who believes in the equality of any and all genders. I refer to myself as a feminist fantasy novelist because I got into not writing novels because I could never find the strong women that I wanted in the fantasy novels I loved. It was always the guys who got to go out and do adventures and quests and all that. And I was like, well, why can't women do it too? And so I started writing.
Very cool.
And
that kind of that dovetails a little bit on my philosophy with podcasting. A lot of times I'll hear people complain about podcasts. They're like, oh, there's no podcast out there for me. There's nothing. No one's talking about what I wanted them to talk about. And it's like, well, go start your own. It's so easy, you know, and you kind of owned that. You said, well, there aren't characters that I want to read. I'm not finding the ones that I want. So you started writing them yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Thank you.
And you mentioned I'm going to get this wrong. The Asexual Society?
Asexual Artists.
Artists. And I thought it was the Asexual Artists Society. So the Asexual Artists. So what's that all about?
Basically, we live in a very monosexist society, which believes that sexual orientation falls on a gay straight spectrum. And the result of that is it erases the voices of bisexual, pansexual, and asexual people. And when I was first querying literary agents and publishing houses, I got a lot of ace phobia. Ace is short for asexual, where I even had a literary agent flat out tell me that an asexual artist will never move books. They're too niche. Nobody cares.
Really?
So Yeah. And I was really, 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 really pissed at that. So I kind of just said, fuck you. I'm just going to publish my own shit. And I did. And one of my goals in life is to highlight that there are asexual artists out there, and we do have a voice, and we are contributing to the artistic fields, even if we're being pretty much ignored. And yeah, so I started a blog to interview asexual artists. I put out a call on social media. And as of this date, I have interviewed 100 artists.
Wow. Mm. And you do that on Tumblr and WordPress?
Yes, I do.
And so once again, you identified something that needed doing.
Yep.
And just went out there and did it yourself.
Pretty much.
Now,
not me, who?
How long have you been doing that?
Have I been doing asexual artists?
Yes.
Let's see. I believe I started in January. I got really annoyed because there was a list of books with asexual representation. I believe it was 10 books and only one had asexual authors. That every other book was written by somebody who didn't identify as asexual. And a friend of mine said, well, why don't you make your own list of books by asexuals? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I sat down and I couldn't think of a single one besides myself. And I was like, oh, that's not good. And so, yeah.
There's definitely like a clarion call right now going on throughout, especially science fiction and fantasy fandom for diversity. And it sounds like you found an area where there really needs to be more.
Yes, there definitely. Because, I mean, all the calls I see for diversity, I have never seen anybody mention monosexism or greater representation for asexuals, bisexuals, pansexuals. And it's something that really needs to be addressed.
Very cool. And so you're out there doing it.
Yeah, I'm probably going to get hate for that. Somebody's going to tweet me. You fucking liar.
No, no, they won't. But again, you identified an area that needed some, like, a spotlight shown on it and needed some attention, and you just decided to do it yourself, which is awesome.
Yeah, I try.
So let's talk a little bit about your fiction. So you have the Shapeshifter Chronicles.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you tell folks about that?
All right. I'm a massive, massive, massive myth nerd. My background is in gender performance and classical mythology. So I thought up this series where I could incorporate my knowledge of myths with fantasy. And the series is basically... It starts out with a woman named Isis stumbling on this murder scene, and she photographs it for the local paper. And the next day, all evidence of the murder has vanished, including the body from her pictures. And Isis, being who she is, she can't let this go, so she immediately starts investigating. And in the course of her investigation, she finds out she's not human like she originally thought she was. She's actually part shapeshifter, part guardian. Guardians are kind of like ancient deities from assorted myths. And the series is her and three other women kicking ass, taking names, trying to figure out what's going on, why it's happening, how they can stop it, that kind of thing.
Very cool. So what types of myths are you drawing on for this story?
I've mostly focused on Greek and Roman.
I love Greek and Roman myths.
Greek is awesome. Roman, I'm a bit meh, but Greek, yeah, I love Greek. I'm eventually incorporating some Native American myths, some Irish myths.
Cool.
There's probably going to be some Norse in there at some point. I was actually laughing with a friend because I had plans to bring in Loki, and then the Marvel films exploded. And I was like, God damn it.
Well, the Marvel versions of the Norse gods is quite different.
It is, but still, it's like, if you mention Loki, people are going to think Tom Hiddleston, and I'm like, I can't compete with that.
Do you know in the comics, they changed Loki into a woman?
I heard something about that. I heard they changed Thor into a woman, too.
Well, they didn't change Thor. What they did was a woman became worthy and was given the power of Thor.
I don't think it was actually. Okay, all right.
But but Loki, I think, was actually either reincarnated in a woman's body or something. And I know all the people who read the current Marvel comics are now, they're going to send me hate mail because I'm not getting it right. But yeah, I guess Loki was in a woman's body.
Nice.
Yeah.
That could be dangerous.
So is it Native American myth that calls them skinwalkers?
You know, I believe it is.
Because shapeshifters, I enjoy as well. And I like the myths of the skinwalkers and different ones. And of course, Zeus was always going around changing his shape and turning into different things. But usually to seduce women. Which...
Yeah. I had a mythology professor who had a great way of describing his encounter with one of his lovers. He's like, yeah, Zeus was one of the first golden showers.
Oh, that's terrible.
It really is, but we were all laughing.
So you decided to write these stories, and then you went indie pub. So you're doing this yourself.
Mm-hmm. I am. And I am. So please buy my books.
Which is why, you know, I saw you at Capricorn, and you had a table, a booth there in the dealer's room, and you were selling your books.
Yep. That's pretty much my job. I go around to conventions all over the Midwest. Hopefully one day I'll make it to Cali and New York and just, yeah, sell my books.
Very awesome. So what made it, was it just the reaction of literary agents that made you decide to go that way? Or was there something else? Was another catalyst?
It was basically, yeah, the literary agents and the publishers. It was just like wave after wave of misogyny, ace phobia. And it became very apparent that if I didn't run in the right circles, I didn't have a chance in hell. And so I was like, yeah, I'll just do it myself. And, you know, one of the things I really like about indie publishing is the story is mine. I don't have anybody like butting in telling me to change this or that. And yeah, when I make mistakes, I have nobody but myself to blame, which, you know, you kind of have to have a thick skin for that. But I like having the story being my own without any kind of like interception or whatever.
Sure. And do you see this being like a long series? Are you doing like a trilogy? What are your plans?
Oh, God, no. Everybody asks me that. I'm like, well, the series, the Shapeshifter Chronicles, I could see it going for maybe 7 or 8 books. But what my overarching grand master plan is I want to do something similar to what comics do, but with literature. Where I introduced a couple different universes in book 4. So basically, I want to write like a ton of different stories that takes place in the same universe, so to speak, but with different characters. So that's kind of my plan. It's everything set in the same sort of universe, but on different worlds with different characters, different stories, that kind of thing.
So you mentioned in book 4, how many books are there in the Chronicles so far?
4.
And what are their names?
First one is Seer from the Green. Then there's Through Storm and Night, From the Ashes, and Haunted by the Kitties.
Okay, and Seer is spelled different.
Yeah, S-E-R-E. It's from Plutarch's retelling of the legend of Isis and Osiris. Mm-hmm. He was ragging on this group who worshipped, I believe it was Isis. I can't remember off the top of my head. But I guess they would shave their head or something like that. And he was ragging on them and their practices. And he mentioned, I believe it was a passage from maybe Hesiod, something about you shall not sear from the green, which means to cut something away so something new can grow. Mm. And the phrase stuck with me. And so I was like, yeah, I'll use that as a title.
I love it when stuff like that just sticks with you.
Mm-hmm.
There was something, I was watching something on History Channel or something like that, and they were talking about consumption.
Mm-hmm.
And, I thought, oh, consumption, isn't that a cool, just a cool thing. You know, it's something that people thought they had or that they suffered from. It was the consumption, you know, in the Old West, and mm-hmm. Doc Holliday had it.
Yeah.
And my brain immediately went to, well, what if it was supernatural?
Ooh.
And then I wrote a book called Consumption, a little short story kind of thing. So,
oh, cool.
I love it when that happens. It's just like something triggers in your brain and either immediately or years later or something like that, it becomes part of a story.
Yep, definitely. Oh, I love that. It's the greatest feeling.
Now, you mentioned Greek mythology and Roman mythology. The Romans pretty much just assimilated everybody else's stories and changed the names.
Yeah, and then they kind of, like, added their own characteristics. So, like, oh, gosh, I really hate what they did to Artemis. I am infatuated with Artemis. I do not care for Diana.
How come? I mean, what are the changes that made you not like her?
Artemis kind of had, like, more free will, and she watched over more women, whereas Diana was kind of all about virginity and purity, and it just... I just never cared for it.
Understood. So you're pulling from all these different mythologies. You said that you set up in the 4th book, you know, sort of like alternate universes similar to, we'll say, like Earth 616 and 16, whatever is, I think, the 2 Marvel universes right now. And I forget what the DC universes are, like Earth 1 or Earth something or other.
Well, it's actually different worlds.
Different worlds. So
yeah.
is it Earth, or is it like a completely different world?
It's a completely different world. There are like, I believe, 4 or 5 different worlds where they're connected to, Earth is kind of the crossroads for a bunch of different worlds. And the Meadows, which is where the Guardians are, is kind of has a similar setup, but a little less chaotic. So there's one world, which is the Seelie Court, which you have the Fae, elves, dwarves. Mm-hmm. All that. There's a vampire world. There's a lycanthrope world.
Well, I heard that the lycanthrope world has gone to the dogs.
I actually played around with lycanthropes where there's different clans. So lycanthropes are similar to shapeshifters, but they can only shift into one form, as opposed to shapeshifters can shift into pretty much anything.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the only mortal supernatural species. So they only have a lifespan of like, I believe, 1,500 years.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, Not that old.
Not that old. Not that, no. They're spring chickens. Oh, gosh.
So when you're traveling around, and you said you go all over the Midwest, which is, you know, Capricorn was in Chicago, or in the mm-hmm. Chicagoland area. And when you're traveling to these conventions, obviously you're getting tables and selling your books. Are you also trying to do panels and talk about these topics?
I do. I did a panel last year at C2E2. I do panels at Capricorn. I have WISCON coming up. I'm, oh God, giving my first ever solo presentation all about where are the asexual voices in genre. So panic attack about that. But I submit different panels, and sometimes I sign up to volunteer for panels at various conventions. Some I don't, just because they'll put indie authors on the ship panels, which I'm not interested in.
Well, I think it depends on who's running the thing, right?
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it's awkward. You and I were talking about it a little bit beforehand. I am by far the whitest guy anyone will ever meet. I am, you know, I'm Irish. I can burn under the light of an easy bake oven. I am very, very pale, you know, and I'm the whitest guy in the world. So, and, you know, Irish on one side, hillbilly on the other. And as Ian said to me one time from Ireland, he's like, well, what's the difference? But I was asked last year to run a panel on diversity. And so it was me, Chuck Wendig, and Jim Hines, mm-hmm. and then Carol Berg and Amy Box. And so Chuck, Jim, and I, without even talking about it, we're just like not talking much. We just let Carol and Amy talk. Because we're sitting there going, you know, yeah, let's put three white dudes on the diversity panel.
I was at a convention once where they had a panel about strong women in sci-fi, and all the panelists were white men.
It happens. So, but it's good that you're getting to get, you know, around and you're able to do some panels and suggest, you know, obviously you have to suggest panels to them, and at least they're accepting the suggestions and doing the panels.
Some are.
So what's next for Lauren? I mean, you've got four books out now. I'm assuming you're putting what, one out a month, so that your fans are, you know, just rapidly reading them and waiting for them.
Oh, gosh. Well,
she's like, no, shut up. I'm not writing a book a month.
I was at one point. I had rough drafts for my first four novels. Well, actually, the fourth one, I had to throw away a 400-plus page manuscript because it was unusable. Just awful.
I hate that.
Yeah, that was, oh, God. Still pains me to think about, but what's next? I'm outlining the fifth one. I plan to write that and have it released next year. I aim for releasing my books on Halloween because Halloween is the best fucking time of year. Yeah, and just speaking on panels, trying to get the word out, trying to do marketing work, which that's the downside of self-publishing is marketing work.
Yes, it is.
Oh, God.
And so what conventions are you planning on attending this year? Do you have like a con schedule?
Yeah, I do on my webpage.
You have a webpage? Oh my gosh. You should tell people what it is.
I know, it's shocking. I have WISCON. I have my friend's movie premiere, Hobo with the Trash Can. I'm going to have a table there. Lake Count Icon. I have a convention in Iowa in October, which Jim C. Hines is going to be at, so looking forward to seeing him again. Mm-hmm. I actually had to leave a con early because I got violently ill, and of course, he's like the guest of honor there, and I met him briefly, and I was like, I'm sorry, I look like death. I'm about to die. Archon in October, WindyCon in November, that should be my last con of 2015. Oh, God, is it 2015? Yeah, it's 2015.
Yeah, it is. What's your website?
LaurenJankowski.com.
Do you want to spell Jankowski?
Oh, geez. J-A-N-K-O-W-S-K-I.
So it amuses me that you said OGs because it's your name.
I know.
So like I was doing it, I would have been the one in trouble.
I know. It's so horrible. I sometimes forget how to spell my last name, especially at cons. Like I get nervous in interviews, and I've been known to misspell my last name. But oh god, last day of cons, I seriously have to spell it in my head constantly. I'm like, you can do this, Lauren. You can spell your own name.
And on laurenjankowski.com, do you have a blog?
I do. I do. right now I'm doing chapter by chapter commentary on all my books. I really, 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 really love DVD commentaries. And me being who I am, I thought, oh, that would be kind of cool if somebody did that for books. I know. I'll try to do that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's awesome, but I'm horrible at keeping up with it.
So, were you a fan of Buffy?
I have some issues with Joss Whedon's work, but I did find parts of Buffy entertaining.
There is his DVD commentary is actually some of my favorite DVD commentary. Just because of, you know, and all the in jokes and everything. And I think it was on the DVD commentary is, you know, he discussed killing off characters. And I think that was when he said something along the lines of, well, he had to kill a character because the other actors were getting complacent. And so he wanted, you know, he wanted them to get back on their toes.
Nice.
Something along those lines. And so I thought that was kind of funny. Do you do Twitter and Facebook?
I do.
Do you have links to that from your website, or do you just want to tell people like what your Twitter handle is?
My Twitter handle is @Lauren_Jankowski-I, because somebody took my fucking name.
That happens occasionally. It's kind of sad.
It really is.
I have a friend who someone has his name already, and there's a character on television who has his name, and so he is essentially his name 93 on Twitter. So yeah, that's kind of sad.
I always say, do not piss off a writer if you have a really good name.
What's the great shirt that people wear? You are this close to being killed off in my book.
Oh yeah. Oh, I probably shouldn't say this, but there's a villain in my fourth novel that has a very familiar name to somebody who I once knew.
Hey, it happens.
He was very passive aggressive and was starting shit with me online when I was trying to think of a name for this villain. I was like, wow, your name's actually really fucking cool.
Well, Lauren, this has been a lot of fun. Do you have anything you'd like to tell our listeners before I let you go?
Keep reading. Be awesome. Keep reading. Save the lives of indie authors.
There you go. Well, thank you, Lauren Jankowski. Everybody go to laurenjankowski.com. She's got links to her Facebook, Twitter, and all her books there.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hugo Award-winning SF Signal podcast. Your host is Patrick Hester, an author, a blogger, and a functional nerd. His website is www.atfmb.com, which stands for All Things From My Brain. ATFMB is also his Twitter handle and where you can find him on Facebook. Our podcast is available for download every week at sfsignal.com or via iTunes. Look for the links to subscribe in the sidebar at sfsignal.com or search SF Signal in iTunes. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell your friends and have them tell their friends and so on and so on. Visit the Hugo Award-winning sfsignal.com for all of your speculative fiction needs. John D. and the SF Signal regulars offer up new content every day, from weekly mind melds featuring your favorite authors, editors, and artists from the SF&F field, to book reviews, original articles and essays, fiction deals, movie reviews, videos, links and roundup posts, and more. Click the RSS button in the sidebar of your browser to ensure you never miss a post. The SF Signal podcast is powered by the Functional Nerds.
Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Angry robot.
It's like talking to a child.
Magic wooey.
Wah, wah.
Thinking and crap.
I don't even know what the horseman is.
And scene, you bastard.